100 Word Stories. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the 100 Word Stories Weekly Challenge at oneadayuntilthedayidie.com. And I feel like it. You know, the last time my wife went out of town, I broke my arm. This time I went to Kroger using her truck. And either the cashier or the bagger or someone had the cold flu plague crud, and I picked it up. So you could probably hear that in my voice. And if you can't, it's a testimony to my fortitude. The topic isn't fortitude, however. It's billions, as in billions of microbes coursing through my body, screwing everything up. However, other people have taken a different tack on that particular topic. Let's dip into the old mailbag and see what other people have come up with so that you don't have to hear me bitch about feeling sick. A weekend! It's a beautiful weekend, and I feel like dog ass. Oh, I'll talk about dog ass later. Until then, how about a story from Tura? They've got two this week, but you're just going to hear the first right now.
When I was 5, the universe scared me. The big encyclopedia talked about billions of years, billions of billions of miles. When I worked out what a billion was, I was terrified. But what's it all for? I wailed. Wait till you're my age, said my mother. When I was 33, I asked her again, so what's it all about, remember? But she just said, wait till you're my age. She died at 76, and now here I am, 76 myself, her age at last. And I still don't know what it's all for. I guess that's what she meant.
Thank you, Tura. You know, both my grandmothers are 99. I don't talk to them much. I probably should, although I'm sure that by now they know what it all means. They just forgot it. They don't even know where the frickin' TV remotes are. Or the bathroom, I guess. Let's not talk about that. Instead, let's talk about Jeffrey Fisher's story. If I sound a little robotic this morning, it's because I feel sick and I'm dog-ass tired. Oh, about the dog-ass tired. I'm trying to do my laundry, too. What a mistake. The worst part about it is the communal laundry center has dog shit all over one side of the floor. That's right, people bring their dogs with them, so that their dogs can shit all over the floor. You would think that if your dog shits all over the floor, you'd clean it up. Nope, not that motherfucker. Ha ha ha! I hate my neighbors. When are we getting a goddamn house? Maybe we'll just move in with Jeffrey Fisher.
Hello, Jeffrey Fisher here with my stories for the Weekly Challenge on the topic of billions. Before I start, let me apologize in advance. Some of you of a certain age might remember the Carl Sagan show Cosmos, where Sagan would talk about celestial happenings, various things out there in the universe, in his unique accent. Well, I can't do that accent, but just think of Carl Sagan's actual accent when you think of this first story. This is called Cosmos. When the cosmos were formed, gases coalesced to create galaxies, solar systems, planets. Billions and billions of planets. Some of those planets contained bits and pieces of life, life that grew and evolved into sentience. In the nearly infinite potential for extraterrestrial life among those untold billions of planets, isn't it strange, isn't it just the tiniest bit odd, that the life science fiction shows find tends heavily toward the humanoid. In fact, many alien species are indistinguishable from humans. Perhaps this just reflects the bias on the part of explorers, recognizing sentient life more often when it looks like us. But a cynic might think this reflects tight budgets and/or a lack of imagination. The story is called Upward Mobility. When he was a child, Barney stole. He stole from his mother's wallet. He stole money from his brother's lemonade stand. He stole candy and comic books from the drugstore. As an adult, Barney had greater ambitions. He stole an identity, took a job as a bond trader, and eventually made it to the top of Goldman Sachs, where he was able to steal millions from unsuspecting investors. Still, this wasn't enough for Barney. He parlayed his access to power into a political career. Now he steals billions at a time and is honored for it.
Thank you, Jeffrey, except for one thing. Don't ever apologize for something. Just do it. If people are offended, to hell with them. It's not like you shit on the laundry room floor, like a dog. Although, if you do that, you really ought to apologize for it. And clean it up. Oh, man. Maybe I got sick from listening to all those Welcome to Night Vale podcasts. I just started listening. And what did I do? I listened to 26 episodes of it yesterday. Didn't do anything else but go to the grocery store and pick up the plague crud from some son of a bitch there. And then I listened. Man, that's good stuff. Although, they're New Yorkers. They suck. Oh, what? I should move on to a story before I stick my foot further into my mouth? Okay. How about I share with you a story from Tom? Tom's not only got story, but he's also got updates. We may find out who's the latest monkey, although I can't for the life of me remember what iron and golden and plaid and rabid and Ebola and that monkey that sat on Ross's shoulder while in Friends when he wasn't getting laid. How about I just put his file right here and then hit play? I think that would be for the best.
Hello, Night People. Tom here, and I've got updates. A whole mess of movement. Our good friend Caleb and Liana continue their drop through the top 20 as Cliff passes Caleb with 95 stories, and both Jeffrey and Tura pass Liana with 89 stories and 91 stories, respectively. Trading places for the fifth time, young Danny Dwyer displaces Beauchamp's with 96 stories, so dangerously close to gold. Caledonia breaks into the top 70, moving ahead of Mike Thinks, Tapitha, Mick, Craig, Charlie White, Mieta Stardust, Ross, Abernathy, and Catwood. Of note, Master Singh has now crossed the 250,000 mark. And tonight's story is called A Well-Defined Relationship, Part 11. Third base, yelled the crowd. Roars of laughter, applause, up go the house lights. Bannister pauses in the lobby for a cigarette. A hand reaches out to light his Camel. Rio Bravo, pretty damn good way to get my attention. Dino Ma gestures towards the main casino. Sorry, Pilgrim, I don't gamble. Neither does Mr. Wynn. Billionaire Barnard Wynn was the second richest man in Bozeman, a far cry less respectable than Angus. He was no less influential in matters of practical governance. There were a billion reasons to make for the stage, and only one to continue forward.
Thank you, Tom. Although, at this point, Leanna, Caleb, they've been gone for so long, I wouldn't call them good friends. In fact, they really need to forward their mail somewhere, and They left a whole bunch of crap in the garage. We need to get that cleared out so we can park the Volkswagen in there. You know those things will fall apart in the rain. Hell, they fall apart when you turn the key. Yeah. No, thank you for the updates in the story, Tom. And a well-defined relationship. If it takes 11 chapters, is it really well-defined? Right. Maybe I should just play Cliffs to Await. Suggestion, I don't have one this week. Now, that could be a fun suggestion. Could be suggestion. That could be a fun one. A topic of topic. Yeah, I just recorded a bunch. I posted up on Twitter asking people for topics, and I put a few in there. And, yeah. But really, I'll probably just delete them all. How about I just play Cliff's story? Would you like that? Yeah, I knew you would. That's why you're here.
The Galactic Empire is a very large place. 300 billion stars, give or take. Granted, only 1% of those stars have worlds that support life, but that's still 3 billion star systems. Billions of worlds, each home to billions of sentient beings. That's a lot of people when you start doing the math. Now, taking all that into account, what do you suppose the odds are that of all the people who walk into all the bars on all the worlds, the one who walked in here tonight would be my ex-wife? That's just how my luck runs. And here's my second story on the topic of billions. Legend tells of a man who offended the gods so deeply that they decided to destroy the world. One goddess felt sorry for mankind and pled their case. She was somewhat successful. The destruction would be postponed. The man was ordered to count the grains of sand on every beach in the world. When he was finished, so was the world. That's why, whenever I see an old man on the beach who looks like he's concentrating very hard on the sand, I start shouting random numbers at him until he gets frustrated and goes away. You know, just in case.
Ha 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 ha! That's the spirit. Screw with strangers. Thank you, Cliff. Are you a stranger? Should I screw with you? 75! 122! 3! Are you still counting? You would think you would go around with earplugs. Oh well. There are some times when we stand on the shoulders of giants and look far, far in the distance at all the things yet to accomplish. And then there's Richard, who has already climbed down from their shoulders and paid them $5. What is that in pounds, anyway? It's probably like 2 pence at this point. Our economy is in shambles. Shambles, I tell you! And it's not going to get better. So tell your kids to study shambles. That's shambles, not shingles. Trust me, you don't want to study that. Here's Richard.
Good morning. Well, either these topics are getting harder, or my ability to do anything with them is rapidly decreasing. Still, I've got coffee, so I'm not complaining. My first story this week is called Rethink. Gingerly, George clambered towards the rear doors and peered through. The container appeared to be on the back of a truck, speeding down an otherwise empty road. Nothing made sense. For the first time since waking in hospital, George found himself questioning the assumptions he'd made. Of the billions of possibilities, killer plants, zombies, and alien invasions now seemed the least likely scenarios. That was probably a good thing, but the more likely possibilities were equally worrying. Was he in the midst of a civil war? Had somebody dropped the bomb? All he could do now was wait and see. I've called this next one Invasion. They came, and there was nothing we could do to stop them. Not in their hundreds, not in their thousands, not even in their millions. When they came, it was a horde so vast that no human being could grasp their sheer numbers. When they came, it was in their billions. An army blotting out the light of the sun, destroying everything in its path and leaving nothing in its wake. We were defenceless. And though we had the power to simply crush their tiny bodies in our hands, size isn't everything. It's numbers that count. And the locusts won. Just one more this week. This one's called Billions. How is it possible that out of all the billions of galaxies and the infinite billions of stars and their planets, that this could happen? How is it possible that out of the billions of people on this planet and the countless billions of possible places they could choose to be, that this should occur? What are the odds that two people should run into each other in the same bar at the same time, just as we did? And what are the chances I would run into my boss on the day I should have been working from home? That's all for this week, folks. Have a good week. Goodbye.
Felicity sometimes runs out. I gotta warn you, the older you get, the less felicity you have, especially when you have the plague crud from those sons of bitches at Kroger. Thank you, though, for soldiering through like a soldier, or if you're a pilot, piloting through like a pilot, or if you're a seaman, well, the less said the better. Thank you, Richard. It's okay. Some people go away. They come back. Or they don't come back, but Tom will still consider you good friends. He's a sucker for that, you know. Me, I consider them enemies and nemeses, especially when they set up their own Schmundred Word Schmories podcasts out there. Oh, it's obvious that they've taken the idea and not just run with it, but skipped like a little girl. That makes me angry. Until, of course, I start coughing again, forget what I was doing, and step in the dog shit in the laundry room. You know what needs a good washing? My mouth. With soap. While I go do that, would you like to hear a serendipity story? Oh, good! Then you will! You will! How about serendipity story right now?
The project had taken many years and cost billions in public money. But at last, it was finally complete. The SS Bubonic sat majestically in dry dock, awaiting the moment of launch. The greatest marine vessel ever to be constructed. 42 decks gleaming white in the sun. She was larger than a small city and a supremely breathtaking sight. The champagne crashed against her bow. And to massive applause, she slid majestically into the sea. Then sank, almost instantly, without a trace. At the public inquiry, the architect's defense was simple. Nobody told us that she had to float.
Oh, how they missed the boat on that one. Too bad. Thank you, Serendipity. You know, I should probably play Modest Mouse, Miss the Boat right now. That would involve effort. I'm too tired for that. Screw it! I'm putting in Modest Mouse, Miss the Boat. Deal with it!
subject, could we change the subject now? I was knocking on your ears, don't be you, you were always out. Looking towards the future, we were begging for the past. Well, we know we had the good things, but those never seem to last. Oh, please just last. Everyone's unhappy, everyone's ashamed. Well, we all just got caught looking at somebody else's page. Well, nothing ever went quite exactly as we planned. Our ideas held no water, but we used them like a dam.
Oh, and we carried it all so well, as if we got a new position. Oh,
everyone goes crazy over such and such and such. We made ourselves a pillow, we just used it as a crutch. We were certainly uncertain, at least I'm pretty sure I am. Well, we didn't need the water, but we just built that good goddamn.
Oh, and I know it so myself.
Was it ever worth it? Was there all that much to gain? Well, we knew we'd miss the boat, and we'd already missed the plane. We didn't read the invite, we just danced it our own way. All our favorites were plain, so we could shake, 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 shake. Tiny curtains opened, and we heard the tiny clap of little hands. A tiny man would tell a little joke and get a tiny laugh from all them folks sitting, drifting around on bubbles then, thinking it was us that carried them. When we finally got it figured out that we had truly missed the boat.
Modest Mouse missed the boat. Good tune. Says a lot about things. You know, instead of rambling a bunch after playing that, I'll just drag and drop Justin here so that you can hear his story. We've got a lot of stories to go. I'm in no rush. Because the longer I babble, the more time that Red Goddess has to sit on her ass and don't send the story in yet. No, really, folks, why are you waiting until 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock on Sunday when you know I get up and do laundry and get this done and I'm waiting, 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 waiting? Does your muse only work after Sunday mornings after you... Who took over that show after Charles Kuralt? I know that Mo Rocca's on it now. Is Mo Rocca the host? Oh, my God. That's so scary. Well, after Mo Rocca tells his story, does your muse say, oh, that inspired me to do something? Why do you wait so long? You can always skip a week. Or just start posting Monday. Or whatever. I find that if it takes me a week to be inspired by something, I've already done 20 other things, and I say the hell with it. But that's just me. Maybe that's what Caleb and Leanna did. You're good friends, Tom. They're no longer inspired immediately. They take a whole week, and then they're like, oh, I can imagine them doing that right now, instead of getting on with their lives. Like we will right now. Here's Justin.
Space Turtle! Justin Lemester here from thespaceturtle.com with my 100-word story. This one's based on a role-playing game you may have heard of called Dungeons and Dragons. A specific event that happened while we played one time in the days of yore. Also included last week's topic in because I forgot it like a dork. What do you do after raiding the dungeon and the prized artifact is in your hands and your enemies close behind? You could take your airship to fly away, but it's not that great of an airship, and your enemies might catch up. What you do is take the astral diamond you pulled out of a treasure chest and give it to the airship parking attendant so you can accidentally take the bigger, better airship of your enemies. That attendant won't stick around and hope for grace from the victims. He'll be long gone, billions of copper to his name. Bonus plug! If you like games, games that include the song you're hearing right now, go to humblebundle.com/weekly. You have a few more days to get the Humble Weekly Bundle, which supports Charity Water, where my friend Rail works. So, you get some games, you give some money to charity, and people get water.
Oh, just shut up. Oh, wait, no. Wrong podcast. Thank you, Justin. I like that story very much. Yep, the alarm just went off. I don't know, I put both of my loads of laundry in, walked around the dog shit, then one was ready, and the other one still had 25 minutes to go in the wash. Like there's some sort of time bubble, or bubble of time, or bubbly time, or something, because the timer got weird. Oh well, I guess I need to throw that in the dryer. Maybe the bubble timeliness will screw up the timer, and it'll already be dry as I'm throwing it in the dryer. This crap just confuses me. How about I just hand things to Muncie? Or as I like to call him, Cousin Larry. Oh yeah, yeah, you like that, don't you?
Meanwhile, in Europe, the enemy forces march, crushing all before them, and only Captain Action and his Action Brigade can stop them. But wait! Safely tucked away, high above the fray, they sit in the Action Zeppelin, listening to a 100-word story by Muncie. By Muncie? Surely not! That guy's a hack! Yet there they sit, transfixed. Infinity by Christopher Monroe. In a nearly infinite universe, there are billions upon billions of stars surrounded by potentially trillions of planets. Perhaps some of those planets do contain life. In fact, the law of averages implies that some must. And yet, only one star in one small corner of the universe, and one planet circling it, with 7 billion people inhabiting it, produced you. 7 billion people on one of trillions of planets circling billions of stars, and yet, there's only one. You. Nonetheless, don't let that trick you into thinking you matter, because in a nearly infinite universe, trust me, you don't. Broken Escalator, still available at Smashwords and Podiobooks.com. Tweets at Munzee Munzee for more about me. For more about the gripping adventures of Captain Action and the Action Brigade, tune in next week. See you there, Captain.
Okay, everybody, be absolutely honest. Have you listened to Broken Escalator yet? Because if you haven't, damn you to hell. It's good. Good, I tell you. And if you listen to an episode a day, a week, even an episode a month, you would have heard it all by now, and you'd be saying, thank you. Thank you for damning me to hell for not listening to that, because I deserve it. Because now that I've listened to all of it, yeah, that was worth it, man. That was worth it. You start doing that right now, people. Stop listening to this podcast right now. And go over and listen to Broken Escalator, Chapter 1, right now. I'll be waiting for you. I'll be waiting for you out back with a baseball bat. And if I don't see that you've listened to Broken Escalator, Chapter 1, you're getting the business end of it. Yes, that's right. There is a business end of baseball. Bats. And Alex Rodriguez and Miguel Tejada and that jerk with the Brewers, they deserve it. Right up the something. What's the baseball term for asshole? I don't know. Probably an Urban Dictionary. Anyway, thank you, Muncie. And go listen to Broken Escalator right now, people. What? You think there's going to be something better on this podcast? Ha ha ha! Not happening. We do this every week. We're tired. We're losing the, what was the term that Richard said? Fancy or sparkles or whatever the hell he said. It's all going downhill. I figure the last one will be Weekly Challenge 400. The topic will be, ah, crap, not this shit again. And then silence. I'm starting to feel a little bitter. Whew. Right. This time it's not iced tea. It's orange juice, cranberry juice, and Sierra Mist. All combined into one glass. Ever tried that? You can do it with 7-Up or Sprite. But Sierra Mist. Diet Sierra Mist, to be specific. Although you don't have to do diet. If you need a few more calories because you're active and you need that sugar rush, well then go ahead. I'm sure there's enough sugar in the orange juice and the cranberry juice, but don't just settle for that. In fact, go get a bag of sugar and just start sucking it down. While you do that, you should listen to Danny's story. Although if you haven't yet listened to Broken Escalator, damn you to hell!
Hello, hello, Danny Dwyer here with Weekly Challenge 382. Billions. Billions! How much is it going to cost to run on the next Republican ticket for U.S. Senate? The spineless wretch of a Christian white conservative male meekly asked. Oh. It will cost you billions, plus your soul, all deposited to me directly in the Bank of China. The devil replied, not kidding. The devil owned China, and all of the souls of the billions of people there. Flash forward to Dr. Evil in the latest abomination of what is to be called the fourth Austin Powers movie. Dr. Evil demands $1 billion. Chump change in the 2013 market. Ask for more.
Thank you, Danny. Hey, $1 billion? I think I'm going to go run for Senate. Give me $1 billion, people. I'll put up a PayPal link. There will be denominations of part of $1 billion, most of $1 billion, and, if you're feeling lucky, $1 billion. Also, if you're feeling generous, I suppose. And have lots of money and not much common sense. No, actually, I don't have a PayPal link up on the site. Donations are gladly not appreciated. Keep your filthy money to yourself. So I need to go back out and grab the first load, because it's dry now. I need to avoid the dog shit on the floor. Nobody's come and cleaned it. Am I going to clean it? No, I don't have a dog. I have a broom. I may sweep it to the corner so it's out of the way. Know what I need to do? I'm going to turn the explicit tag back onto this podcast. If you're a child or a mortified parent of a child wondering why your child is listening to this, guess what? It's explicit now. I'm not going to apologize for that. I'm really angry. I'm really tired, and I'm really angry. And I hate the people at Kroger, those bastards. Every time. Why do I keep going there? I am so stupid. I should go to HEB, or go to Central Market, or go to that place the Mexicans all go to. What is it, Fiesta? Oh, God, that place is gross. But I don't pick up the crud from there, and I don't break my arm. Hey, Zach, man, you want to tell a story? Okay.
Because I couldn't get the John Anilio song Kathy's California Now out of my head, here is Kathy's California Cow. She took a trip to the fair in Sacramento. She bought the prize bull. She loves him more than the rest of her herd. Don't tease him or you'll get trampled. Get out of the way, it's Kathy's California cow. It's Kathy's California cow. Get out of the way, it's Kathy's California cow. It's Kathy's California cow. She misses the milk fat from the jerseys she had as a child. Now she has a billion-dollar ranch of Holsteins with a million-dollar bull that's not polled. Get out of the way, it's Kathy's California cow. It's Kathy's California cow.
Thank you, Zach, man. You know, every week he sends a story in with really, really low recording levels. Guess what? This week, I left it low because I'm feeling really mean and sick and angry, and I'm going to take it out on others. Ha ha! No, I'm going to be nice. I'm going to raise the recording level, as always. At least he recorded it. Some people don't record their stories. I know you're out at a convention, you're out at the Playboy Mansion, you're up in space, and that dude with the hair and the stuff, what, Richard Branson? He's talking, and you're talking, and you just feel like writing from space. And you don't want to record any of that because, well, we little peons stuck on Earth, we shouldn't get to hear what's going on with you people up in space talking about us above our heads, literally. So, I'm going to up the levels on it. But one person who doesn't need their levels up is Lizzie. Yes, she's back. Tom, call her a good friend. Because she is. Because she came back. Leanna, Caleb, no longer on good friends list. You can call them friends if you want, but no, not the good. Not even fair weather. It's no weather anymore. Now we miss them. We should practically memorialize them. Put up some headstones or memoriams or flower gardens. Even though they're not dead yet. To us, they are. Wow, that's pretty mad. So, that's a warning to all you folks who think you can get away from this. Ha ha ha, you can't. Have I driven everyone away yet? No? Alright, I'll do that after Lizzie.
Billions was a great name for a book, he thought. It was easy to say and easy to remember. He was writing about the crisis, so It seemed appropriate. When he sat before the blank screen, the cursor blatantly mocking him, he felt the weight of not knowing where to start. Define billions? He thought. That should work. Not. Billions of seconds ticked away, increasing his frustration. So he took up drinking instead of writing. One day, being quite drunk, he hastily crossed the busy street. That's when billions of atoms hit him. He never even saw the truck coming. This is my story for this week. Check out my blog at lizzygoodcough.blogspot.com and talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
.billionspot.com. Thank you, Lizzie. Whew, I think I got most of it out of my system here. Let's see. Oh, as I've been doing this podcast, I've been copy-pasting the text of the stories as I listen. And here's Lizzie's text. Billions was a great name of a book. Copy. And bold tag. Lizzie. Close the bold tag. And paste. There you go. The next one to copy-paste is June Farrimore. She's back. She takes a break now and then she comes back to build up her reserves of whatever the hell Richard was talking about. I don't remember. You expect me to keep track of all of that? There are dozens of stories here every week and things to drag and drop. Don't overload me, man. I'll blow, I tell you. I'll blow. Oh. Here's June and her story. Maybe I need to check on the laundry. I could bring a broom and then sweep it into the face of the jerk who has the dog that shat all over the laundry room. Next time I see a dog, I'm going to sweep that dog shit into their face. I'm going to put it in a Tupperware. I won't put it in the fridge, though, because... Well, it's not like we ever eat anything in Tupperwares in the fridge. We just put them in there and feel good about it. And then 2 months later, oh, crap, what the hell was that? We have a pen on the refrigerator to write on them. And yet, we don't. Heh. Whatever. We're Americans. We're wasteful. We don't care. Speaking of which, here's June.
Hi, I'm June Farrimore, editor of Poetry and Flash for Way Too Fantasy magazine and website, and host of Fix and Flash Saturdays 8 a.m. on Book Island in Second Life. That's Pacific time for those who don't know how Second Life runs. Anyway, my Flash piece for this week, my 100-word story, because I had to cut 11 words from it to make it fit, is called Billions of Raindrops from the Sky. The sorrows are draining from the sky. Billions of raindrops pelting the ground, each a tear of God's, prayers unanswered from those who call to him every day. He cannot hold them all, and so the rain comes, pounding the earth, pounding our souls, and we are lost. The pain does not end. Anger, there is much anger at God. There are too many of us, his children, and though he loves us, there is not enough time. He did not give himself or his son enough time, and so we are lost, and the pain does not end. So it's 99 words, and I'm not sure whether you would call that a story or not, but it fits well enough. Follow Way Too Fantasy at Way Too Fantasy on Twitter. We also have a YouTube channel and a Facebook page and a website, and it's all Way T-O-O Fantasy. So please check it out. My personal blog is junefairmore.com. Also pretty easy to find. Everything I have social media wise is June Farrimore. So thanks for listening and hope you have a nice day.
And that is how to do a plug for your stuff at the beginning of your story, introducing yourself in a friendly fashion and inviting you to all kinds of things. Way Too Fantasy is really kind of cool. You should try it. It's not a drug. No, it's a website. If it were a drug, I mean, she wouldn't be so open about it. She'd be dropping hints like, "Hey, come by my smoke shop. Yeah, we got the best blown glass out there." And you're thinking, what do you use that for? You ever think that just really these people are, "No, they're for smoking tobacco. We're not responsible for..." Really? Really? You fucking liar. Did I already turn on the explicit tag? Really, people like that should just be honest and say, "Yeah, it's used for marijuana. But we don't sell marijuana. We just sell the pipes. We don't sell the bullet that kills the person. We sell the gun. If they're a dickhead and put a bullet in the gun and put it to their head or point it at their best friend or point it at some person on the street, that's not our problem. It's the jerk who sells the bullets. These things are pretty useless when you don't have bullets for them. Guns don't kill people. Bullets do. I think I'm going to start selling guns out of my home. You should, too. If I had a truck, I would sell guns out of the back of the truck. Wait, my wife's out of town. I can use hers. I'm going to go get some guns to sell out of the back of the truck. Well, you listen to Stephen Soss, the nuclear man. I think he has a problem with guns and all that horrible stuff, so I don't think I'm going to sell any to him. Or maybe I'll give him a big discount and then get it on tape, and we'll all laugh and laugh, and no, I won't. Okay, here's Stephen.
You are not one. Some processes in your brain filter, process, and react before your conscious mind even perceives a thing. The billions of germs in your body mass more than you. Everything from the bit of bacteria digesting your lunch to the rabies virus walking its way up the nerves to your brain. Each, in turn, is made of molecules. Each molecule is a loose cloud of atoms. Each atom, a cloud of potential and energy. Or empty space. You are mostly germs. They are mostly empty space. No wonder you are lonely. You are not one. You are nothing. Like me.
Ooh, that's some nice crickets in the background. You know, I ate a candy bar with crickets in it. It was like a brownie with figs and oatmeal or something and cocoa powder and crickets. It was made with cricket flour. So you weren't going to get any antenna or anything. But still, it was kind of good. Although cocoa instead of chocolate, really fucking lame. They ought to put, like, caramel and stuff, and really doll it up. And, oh, by the way, there's crickets in there, you jerk. People would be like, "I couldn't taste it." That's great. Crickets are great. That's how you convince people. Not this sustainable, organic, hippie crap. You fool them. Just like all the people in the Snickers commercials are like, "You're like Robin Williams when you don't eat our candy." You know what? I wouldn't eat the candy. Maybe there should be a liquor ad or a cocaine ad. When you do cocaine and vodka, you're just like Robin Williams. Enjoy rehab. Singh is back in Australia. Guess what? Yep, 11-part, 100-word story. And it's only part one. man. I'm going to go on a long, long walk. Here's Sing.
The Lakshmi Project by Chris Muni Singh. Outside, the wind was banging, but Meera Devi kept washing the rice. She chanted Ram, Ram with each turn of her hand. Come, she said to Devika, her daughter-in-law, bring Priya. An elder woman reinforced what should be done to ensure abundance. Devika turned the rice also, and then pressed the brown baby hand into the cloudy water. Priya burst into tears. Meera reached in, enclosing daughter and granddaughter's fingers. It felt comforting. Three generations were united through the rice ritual, rinsing away excess starch, leaving pure grains in the pot, while praying to Lakshmi, goddess of wealth. Bim Krishna Das returned from the paddy fields before sunrise, swiping the backside of the buffalo with his stick. Wearing only his wraparound lungi, knotted at the stomach, he entered his enclosure, tying up the beast, then cut fresh grass into chewable chaff with the hand grinder. Bim fed his animals, then crossed the compound. He found his jute string charpoy, positioned it in the shade, and lay down. This was his routine. Although they subsisted on only 2 acres of land, he never thought of himself as poor, and since planting the new seed, yields had been very good. Instead of replanting the seeds from the harvest, Bim Das gladly used the seed company's higher yield variety. It was definitely superior, and the money it generated did allow him to repurchase fresh seed stock along with the prerequisite pellets of urea each season. He even dreamed of one day owning a tractor and hiring himself out to other farmers to increase his income. Meanwhile, Devika came with a glass of sweet, milky chai, the baby balanced on her hip. She left, but soon returned with a stainless steel thali piled high with rice, along with a matching dish of gruel yellow lentil dal. In another metal dish was a cut red onion and a long green chili. Bim Krishna Das sat cross-legged on his charpoy, poured the dal over the steaming rice and ate, occasionally licking the runoff from the side of his fist. He ate to the very last grain, one of billions from similar harvests along the delta where he and his community lived. Laying down, he said, Ram, Ram, a few times before falling asleep, exhausted. Bim Krishna Das had inherited debts from his father. With a growing family, there were more expenses also. To raise cash, his only recourse was to regularly borrow against the coming harvest. The grain merchant would advance cash on interest, providing seed and fertilizers. During past decades, the subsistence style of biodiverse farming had shifted to monoculture cash cropping. The grain merchant ultimately acted as a conduit for the big seed and fertilizer companies and the government fixed price buying system. Like all small farmers, Bim Krishna Das's agricultural future was determined by outside forces, not to mention the weather. Bapuji, his father, Raj Das, like generations before him, had propagated local strains of rice, millet, squash, corn, and lentils. Agricultural pundits once claimed India produced 100,000 rice varieties alone, not to mention other produce. But since the 1960s, Bapu too had become one of millions cranking the new wheel of the Green Revolution to fulfill the government policy of national self-sufficiency. Despite the propaganda, Bapu resisted the one-season, one-crop philosophy at heart. Traditional, mixed farming methods had lessened risks, although yields were less, and in spite of the vagaries of the weather, rural life had seemed simpler. Before, too, neighbours bartered and cooperated to complement their harvests. For instance, the old man had long ago let a neighbour keep his bee boxes in the mango grove for a portion of the honey. Or they shared tools and even gave a hand with each other's work when required. Above all, they took pride in the knowledge of breeding and hybridizing seed stock, which is the farmer's art. His small holding had once rioted with variety and colour, and there was the real satisfaction of living from one's own rice, milk and produce. But monocropping had changed all that. On the other hand, cash crops put money in the palm, promising an affluent life. And the extra rupees allowed Bim and other sons of the district to go to the newly whitewashed government school. Thus he thought himself the educated one in the family. He looked down upon his old-fashioned father. Young Das also kept up with the latest seeds and fertilizers, chatting with the peons at the farmers' cooperative in nearby Sitapur. And as a badge of learning, Bim Das read the newspaper to the women in the house on his return from market day. Thus the young man worked hard. He bought the merchant's seed shoots and planted them in muddy rows. He channeled the irrigation flow, sometimes getting up in the middle of the night whenever electricity was available to pump water. Although the delta silt was rich, rain was needed in the right proportion at the right time to produce premium grain. Tending wet shoots calf-high in slush, guarding against pests, birds and diseases was the farmer's lot, and deep down he still knew his old irritating Bapu was right, who regularly intoned, "Nature laughs at him who claims to own the land." There was a corner of the far field, beside the old mango grove, that had long been known in the family as Lakshmi's plot. Bim's ancestors had created a grotto from stones and placed a murti, a statue of the wealth goddess, within. The spindly rice stalks that grew in that nook were tough, although meagre in yield. Do whatever you like when I die, but keep Lakshmi's plot. This is God's bank account. Respect the Devi and she will bless you, son. Bhim Krishna Das promised reluctantly. All right, Papu. He'd much sooner have seeded the new genetically modified grain. The fickle mind of nature was most evident through the monsoons coming. At first it was joyful relief after each killing summer. Clouds become drums, then the slow tinkle of musical drops increases to a deluge blessing the rice fields. It fills cooking pots and old ghee tins used to catch leaks in the thatch roof stuffed with polythene bags between bamboo rafters. For hours, the steady ping-ping hit the meniscus of over-brimming containers. With one ear tuned to the sleeping infant, Devika was first to feel the wetness seeping up through her mattress. She raised the alarm.
Join us next week for another installment of The Lakshmi Plot by Chris Mooney Singh.
Remember, that's just part one. Part two, I hope, is coming next week. Otherwise, it's going to be just like one of those movies where, oh, they never did the sequel that they were hinting at the end, like Buckaroo Banzai, those jerks. Actually, it was kind of a standalone movie. It worked. I don't think Peter Weller should go back there. Oh, he's a professor at some university that begins with it. Stanford? Columbia? One of those? Prestigious one? He talks about swords a lot. So, if you ever run into him and you piss him off, he'll smite you with a sword. Someone that won't smite you with a sword is Tura's evil twin, Tura. That's right. Tura had a second story. And it's, what did they say, trimmed down to size? What's the phrase? I need to paste a few more texts in here. Hold on. June. That's right, you get to hear behind the scenes. I forgot Steven. Steven the nuclear man. Well, X-Man, your guns are being shipped by UPS. No, not on one of those big planes. The ones that crash. Logistics. Crash! Yeah, how about pilots that listen to stall warnings and sing and copy-paste probably filled the buffer. And now Tura, or Tura's evil twin, or was it Tura's evil twin that had the earlier story? I don't know. I've been rambling a lot today. I should ramble more.
Like last week's, this is another story written at Fix and Flash in Second Life on Saturday. The prompts were Crap Mariners, Billions, and a Led Zeppelin line. The sky is filled with good and bad that mortals never know. It is called Aliens. Where are the aliens? We know ways to send spaceships to the stars, and any rocky planet provides material to make more spaceships. We could colonize the whole galaxy at near light speed. It would only take a few 100,000 years. That's an eye blink on the cosmic timescale. The galaxy should be crawling with weird creatures already. So where are they? I reckon nobody cares about hick planets like the Earth. All the action's in the crowded center of the galaxy. Billions of planets and billions of people on every one. Filled with stories that we will never know.
You see, you've got June, who's doing Fix and Flash, and you've got Tura, who's participating. All of you should be part of Fix and Flash, including me, instead of me just going to get groceries at Kroger and getting sick because of the jerks and sons of bitches running the register and bagging the stuff because they're mad that I asked for paper instead of plastic. The cats are ecstatic. They're jumping from bag to bag. They're shoving them around. They're playing. They're playing together. You don't know how hard it is to get these two little furry rats to play together and enjoy each other. They're not cleaning each other's ears yet. Those days may be gone forever with the death of Bruin, who ushered in the era of ear cleanings. Social grooming. It was so beautiful watching him clean Mist's ears and Mist cleaning his ears, and both of them cleaning Nardo's ears. And then that whole beautiful synergy, symbiosis, kumbaya, whatever you call it, was over. And I miss those days. Here's Norval Joe. I wonder if he's got his harmonica.
Hello, this is Philip Norval Joe Carroll of the Flying Island Press, and this is my entry for the weekly challenge number 382 with the prompt of billions. So here's my story. Here you go, Harry. Read this and see what you think, the scientist said, handing him a long printout. What's this, Franz? The readout from the plasma quark microscope? You guessed it, buddy. Look closely at the data on page 4. There are billions of them, and on a spinning spherical mass. Did you note the angle of the mass's axis? I did, Harry. And I measured the distance to the energy source it orbits. Harry dropped into a chair, burying his face in his hands. By searching for the smallest subatomic particle, we've peeked through a hole and found ourselves. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
Thank you, Norval Joe. Now, there may be some people that are going to think you really went off the deep end over Broken Escalator. Are you going to go off the deep end for the price of friendship? Hell yeah! Although Norval, being a nice guy, probably wouldn't want me to get all offensive and use profanity and threats. But I will! If you don't listen to The Price of Friendship, one episode a day, week, month, I will punch you in the throat. Do it now. Really, if you are like thinking, oh, I don't have the time, I'm so tired trying to write these 100-word stories for the challenges, send me a note saying, I'm going to take a break this week because I'm going to listen to an episode of Broken Escalator. Or, I'm going to take a break this week because I'm going to listen to an episode of The Price of Friendship. Good. And then, since Tom has such low standards for friendship, because he considers Leanna and Caleb good friends even though they haven't been around for centuries, he will consider you his best friend. Friend ever. Me? I'll be like, cool, you're listening. You will be inspired by Broken Escalator and by The Price of Friendship to write all kinds of things. They will be like your Star Wars is to... Who's that fat dude? The fat dude. You know, the fat dude who makes movies. I don't remember. But he's a fat dude, and he makes movies. Not Orson Welles, he's dead. Not Peter Ustinov, I don't remember him actually directing or producing. Did he? I don't know. I could look it up in Wikipedia, but Wikipedia is always wrong. Okay, repeat after me. If someone ever says, according to Wikipedia, smack them. you're allowed to smack them. You can smack them right there. If they're your underling, smack them twice. If they're your boss, smack them hard. You may smack them so hard that they go into a coma, and you take over their job, and you become the boss, and you will never say, according to Wikipedia. Where did I get that idea? Well, I was reading this Wikipedia article, and it... You tried to catch me, didn't you? Well, not happening. Instead, here's a story from Planet Z. You should probably stop the podcast now and start on your assignment of listening to Broken Escalator and The Price of Friendship. Right now!
Ted was good with numbers, but that's all that was good about him, and for that, he was damned to hell. The devil made him a deal. You count to a billion out loud without a mistake, and I let you go. So, Ted tried, but no matter how close he got to a billion, something would go wrong. Until, finally, he got to a billion. The devil is a man of his word, and he let Ted go. However, heaven wasn't about to let an asshole sinner like Ted in. So, he waited outside the gates, just counting souls.
Thank you for listening to the 100 Word Stories Weekly Challenge on the topic of billions. There were a lot of stories this week, and I hope you enjoyed them. But most importantly, you should have stopped by now and gone to listen to Broken Escalator by Muncie and The Price of Friendship by... who was that again? Not the fat dude who makes movies. Oh, Norval Joe. Until next week, when the topic will be... oh, who gives a crap? Let me look it up. Drag and drop, drag and drop. Just. Just is the topic. This has been Lawrence Simon saying thank you for listening. And, as always, keep it brief.